This is Beverly Sinclair. I am about to introduce part 3 of the third and final interview that George Worm did in November 2021 with General Hudson Austin, who died on September 24, 2022 at his home in Mardi Gras. The General, or G-Man as most of his revolutionary soldiers and comrades used to call him, is the most senior imprisoned member of the Grenada Revolution to pass away, following the deaths earlier of Colville Camu MacBarnett and Phyllis Cord. In this segment, the former Army commander speaks about the decision taken by the NJM to form a military wing to combat the Eric Gehry government in light of frequent bloody clashes with the new leaders who emerged to challenge him for control of the island. It was not General Austin, but someone else who was given the important task to lead the military wing of the NJM in its initial formation.
Okay, AJ, I want to ask you something. As a result of these, the Grenville incident with the beatings, is it after that that the NJM had to make certain decisions? One of the decisions was you have to form a military wing to protect the leadership.
Well, you see so much of the people getting brutalized and this and that, you have to do something. How do you decide? You must have a military wing.
So, at what level was that taken? Was it because I don't think there was no central committee yet. NJM didn't have no central committee then.
No. It had joint coordinating leaders, mm-hmm. Mark and Edie.
Mm-hmm. That was
all. And you had members of the top members, but there was no central committee as such, mm-hmm. And no political view and all that. They didn't have that yet. No? That came long afterwards.
That came during the revolution, central committee? Came in the revolution or before?
Yeah, during the revolution.
So it was the top leadership of the NJM that met and said we have to form a military wing to protect the leadership.
Yeah, that was V, Teddy, Yuri, Sabat, all these guys, right? And I was not the leader of the military wing from the beginning.
Who it was? Teddy?
Teddy was.
Teddy had training in military.
He was a police. You forget?
Oh, yeah.
Teddy was a policeman. Right?
Eche, I want to ask you something. Because I understand that at one time, you were the campaign manager for both Morris and Unison.
Yes.
In the 76 election.
Yes.
Morris was Southeast.
Yeah.
And Uni Northeast.
Yeah, how both of them were in the seat.
Okay. Tell me working with them in the politics, how was it like working with them as a campaign manager?
Look, let me tell you something. Unison and Morris was two decent persons. I remember during the campaign, I used to be talking on every platform. You know what I mean? I used to stop us from using loudspeaker. Remember that? We couldn't use loudspeaker and all them kind of things. I used to use my bare voice. I didn't used to lose my voice, right? And I remember one night after meeting, both Uni and Whiteman called me.
Both Uni and Morris?
Huh?
Both Uni and Morris?
Yeah. I said Uni and Whiteman. Mm-hmm. Both Uni and Morris called me. And they said, you want to talk to me. They say, H.A., you are a young man. And I lashed back at them. I said, I'm older than both of you. You see, if you lose your voice, we don't have nobody to talk. Take it easy. We can't have you talking in every meeting. You see, you don't know how important you are to this campaign. You need the one who turned out to H.A. And I needed to say, without you, a lot of this meeting would not come off. You see, George, I'm the type of person, if I'm doing something, I go all out to do it the best way I could. I don't shimshank and fool around when it comes to dealing with serious matters. I don't do that. You know, also in that election, when I quoted on for the tongue, I used to talk on this platform too. Like I will leave one meeting and go and talk in the next meeting. When I finish talking this one, go to the next one. So I go from meeting to meeting to meeting. That is how I work. I remember once someone said, you are special voice, my second is your special voice. Everybody loses the voice, you can't lose yet. But you know how it goes.
Eche, I also understand that you were so important to the NGM and the scheme of things that people told me that you were also the link between the middle class, the upper class in this area, and the NGM. You were the key man, the link.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And everything had to be done through HA.
Yeah, that was true. That is why I told you before. That is where Bernard had the problem with me. He always found that I was too popular. And that is why I told you, at one point in time, people say, St. Paul's was it. St. Paul's was the seat of the revolution. That's what people used to say. St. Paul used to refer to St. Paul's as liberated territory. Till afterwards, Till afterwards, they see they started studying the beast to march to St. Paul's. You think them fellas in St. Paul's easy? This road in St. Paul so bad it had a lot of potholes. Them fellas got a hint that Greenpeace coming to march in St. Paul's in the morning. And you know what they get, what they did? They get young banana and young Finchie and plant them in all the potholes in the road in St. Paul's.
You're sure it's not you who tell them to do that?
No. I told them to do that. How to listen?
No, Eche, I also understand that you was a kind of live wire in the culture with the Wheat Tent Calypso Tent. Tell me about your role in Wheat Tent.
George, I don't know if you would remember, St. Paul's had a community center that was the old headmaster building. And I don't know what happened, but the old headmaster building burned down. Then they used to have the Calypso show and that. But then, what I told Maurice and them is, look, that Calypso business is real important to St. Paul's. But we can't use the model school because them wanted people to go and mash up all the people furniture. So I tell them, why don't we build a tent, a Calypso tent? I said, but where are we going to do it? So, you see that piece of land on top of the hill there?
I remember the tent was there.
You know where the tent was?
Yes, I remember it.
Huh?
Yes, I remember, on top of that hill.
Right, where the people living on top
there.
I didn't realize that land was collected to Anne. She was in charge of it.
Who, your Anne?
My wife.
Yes.
So I talked about it. I tell her we want somebody to operate the Calypso tent every year. And she said, well, what's wrong? They could clean up there and build a nice Calypso tent there. So I tell Morris about it, and Udi, and then I come with about the Calypso tent. We call a meeting, and they agree. I say, what materials we going to get? I say, boy, we must find materials. I say, first and foremost, we will build it out of log wood. He said, well, log wood. I say, we could get some bag wood, then we go in the bag and cut some wood and build it. And Morris say, okay. He said, if you could do that. I said, I could build a tent. If you want to build that, I could build it. So Maurice said, okay, he said, if you could do that, I will ask Marshall with his truck if you could get a group of men to go in the bag and cut the wood. I could ask Marshall with his truck to take up the wood and drop it for you. I said, no problem. Because I was intending to ask Donald to do it, right? And Marshall come and the boy took up the tent and Cornwall and all the fellas around joined up with me and we built the tent. I used to work building that tent from morning till night. No stop, the police used to say I can't get tired. And that's how it came about. They used to have things in the society hall in Lamarie, but that they wasn't convenient for that. And that is how Turkey and Defender and all the fellas.
Chain and all of them.
And then when we start, year after year, they would come in and help build, repair the tent and fix it up and do all kind of thing.
Tell me, not Bogo, but Norman D'Souza, he got involved in the tent?
Who?
Norman D'Souza, who ran for Gary in 76. He got involved in the tent?
No. Because he was the one who organized the tent over there. When the headmaster building was, he organized that tent. But then when that burned down, they didn't bother with it anymore.
So he was never involved with WeTent at all?
No. He was not involved with WeTent. So all the Californians from Lamarie and Petmont and all along that coming in WeTent.
Mm-hmm.
The name of it was WeTent.
Mm-hmm.
Because all the people put their hand to build it. You see? I always believe in that kind of community work, you know, where people come together and do things.
Yeah. Just now you mentioned the name Cornwall. But somebody told me that, okay, I know that you are a lay preacher.
Huh?
So you mentioned the name Cornwall just now, meaning
yeah.
Bogo Cornwall.
Yeah.
But somebody told me, and you said it to me at some time, that you are a lay preacher in the Methodist Church. But somebody told me that you are the one who brought in Cornwall into the Methodist Church as a preacher. That is true?
No, that's not true. That's not true at all.
Mm-hmm.
Cornwall was baptized a Methodist.
Mm-hmm.
And he went to Sunday school there and all of that, and he went straight on to becoming a local preacher. Okay. I grew up in Mandalu. Okay. And even though our Methodists are mostly used to go, because Mandalu is a Catholic school, right? And then when I come to live in St. Paul's, I start going to the Methodists, because I was baptized a Methodist.
Better.
Right? And so I met Cornwall, yes, even before the I met him in the thing, and then it's when I went in church, I realized that he's a Methodist too. I didn't know that before. Because I went in at a Methodist, because of Cyril Cambridge. Remember Cyril Cambridge? Right. And then we developed a very close relationship, myself and Cornwall. Yeah, I could see his grade.
But Cornwall was not original jewel man. He came in, he got involved with Code and Oral.
He got involved afterward.
Long after them come in NJM.
Yeah, Cornwall was NJM. He got involved with NJM.
Mm-hmm.
It was afterwards, when Code come along, they formed the what they call it?
Oral.
The Oral.
Yeah. And he leaned towards Oral.
Yeah. Well, you see, because I guess what they were being told is that NJM is not giving them revolutionary education. That means, I guess they mean that means NJM was not leading properly on the side of Marxism-Leninism.
So I want to ask you this. You were a Methodist lay preacher, and NJM started to get involved in Marxism-Leninism. But wasn't that kind of contradiction? You was a lay preacher, and your party leaning towards Marxism-Leninism.
You see, NJM, the whole push of Marxism-Leninism did not come until the revolution took power, right?
Mm-hmm.
You find whether or not the OL thing in the secret, because the truth is I didn't even know about some of them. In the secret. Because, okay, for instance, if you go give revolutionary education, you never invite me. You invite H.A. Everybody knew H.A. and they didn't invite him. The point is, he would have known that I was involved with the church. right? He would have known that I'm very close to Morris, right? He would have known also that when I was referred to as bourgeois in the society, I'm very close to a lot of these people, right? Because, you see, when I get on the platform, I used to tell the people, the revolution is for all Canadians. Whether you're poor or you're rich, we all have to survive in Grenada as one people. Listen, Judge, no people. So a lot of people might find a lot of problem with us having links with Cuba. Well, that link with Cuba was really important because the Cuban was telling us all of the mistakes they made. He said they made too many mistakes. So a lot of the rich people run and go with all the wealth. Because they start, he said, what happened? They declare they had too early. They didn't give the people a breathing space. So they were telling us, don't make the same mistake that they made. I guess that is what Earl was all about. They wanted to make Grenada to make the same mistake that Cuba made. Taking over business place and all this kind of thing. Acquiring people place and doing the business. And we didn't do none of that stupidness. The only place was the Coca-Cola factory. When the Coca-Cola factory want to choke all the workers and they want to pay them. We take the factory, we run the factory with the workers, and we give it back to them. To show them that the workers could run the factory, we give it back to them with profit. One of the workers said, that's the best factory ever run. We never acquire anybody property.
Eche, I know you have.
Some people talk so that we acquire Julian property to build the airport. Yes, we acquire part of it. We acquire all the people property. We acquire the part that was needed to give us the length of the airport. Myself and Morris went to the airport to meet with Miss Julian Lawyer. He used to be a prime minister for Barbados. But he was retired at that time. What's his name?
Bree St. John?
Huh?
Bree St. John? Bree St. John? Bernard St. John?
No. Bernard was not a prime minister, man.
Henry Ford?
Henry Ford was not a prime minister, neither.
Not a prime minister?
Barbadian prime minister. Call him one of them.
I know St. John was a prime minister at one time.
Who?
St. John was a prime minister at one time.
No.
Errol Barrow?
Barrow. And I remember the whole discussion because Morris brought me with him. Why? I knew everything about the airport building. I worked on it with the students when I was working in public works at that time. And Mr. Lovett, who was the main surveyor, who from with an island American survey was working on it. He was the one who did get it on the road to. They were the people who established 1910. I worked with them on that airport, doing all the layout and levels. And a lot of people don't know the reason why that airport never built. The reason, the layout for the airport. To get the airport to work as a proper international airport, you had to destroy the salt pond, you had to remove the lighthouse, you had to pass the airport over the sea to Hardy Bay to get the full length of an international airport. And they didn't want to do that. At least the other governments that wanted to do Grenada Airport, they don't want to spend that kind of money on it. And I could tell you that for sure. Some people talk about we get plan and they had no drawn plan for the airport. They had sketches, but no complete plan for the airport. The plan for the airport was done by the Cubans. And I went personally in Cuba to have discussion with Fidel and the architects, even though Selin was the minister. I was appointed as a technical man for the political bill to deal with the airport, then I'll report to Salo. Right? So I know everything about the building of that airport. You see, George, in building an international airport, you have to get the people in the world, what you call them, who are in charge of the environmental business, to check on the airport for you. Happens to Dr. Gittins had real contact with these people.
You mean
Bernard Gittins? Yeah. Gittins. Remember, he was the Minister for Health at one time. And he contacted them to come and check out the airport. Because, look what could happen. If you do not lay out your airport properly, when that plane lift to fly out of your country, all the fumes could stay in the country and pollute the country. The international airport is so built into the wind, into the northeasterly trade wind, so that every bit of fume from that airport go back to the sea. When it taken off and when it landed. When it is coming in to land, it has to go way over the sea and turn and come in. When it is taken off, it takes off from that airport and it have about 1,000 feet to run before it left. Okay? All that was done by us. Surveyed it. Walking down the central line of the airport. How far out the plane have to go before it turned left or turned right. You have to fly all that distance over to Fort Judy. And then it could turn and go where it want to go. A plane burn the most fuel when it is lifting and when it is dropping. That is why we could not put the airport at poles. When a plane jump at poles, all the thing come back in the land. Inside that girdle now. You know how the plane used to come in at poles? It go over the mountain and then it come down. That is wrong. So I had the responsibility to work with the technical people for the airport. The dumping of the salt pond and all of that. The blowing down of the lighthouse. And then we put the lighthouse on 3 gram. It's still there, not so?
Yeah.
Still on 3 gram.
That was part 3 of the 4-part series in honor of General Hudson Austin, whose death on September 24 marked the closing of another chapter in the history of the country. The man who led the attack on Geary's army on March 30, 1979, to bring about the first change of government by a coup d'etat in the English-speaking Caribbean. We will be back with the final part of the interview in about half an hour.